Good afternoon. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Blog Talk Radio Network at Global Patriot Radio. Yes, on blogtalkradio.com is the actual website, and then the sub, of course, Global Patriot Radio. Seven shows over 7 days with more than seven hosts. Well, technically. Yes, every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Mamma Mia, No Sharia. And then Tuesdays, Eric the Kafir is in with the Cross and the Crescent discussion at 6 o'clock Eastern also. 5:30 Eastern every Wednesday, me, Hank Jones, Hank Jones Polysports, where politics and sports meet, and not often in a good way. Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays at noon Eastern, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk, along with the beautiful Christy, revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back. Eric is back. Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern, with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Great stuff. 7 days, seven shows. I figured it out once. I think it's eight hosts. Yeah, eight hosts. So that's there you have it. Every day, something going on here at Global Patriot Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Interact with this show. Of course, you can call in. You can listen in online. If you want to email anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go to Twitter, at hpolysports. That's where I usually give a weekly show run. What's going to happen. And of course I retweet good stuff. I follow good people such as Sue from New Mexico, who's listening in right now on her phone, I believe. I follow Holger, who has some good stuff. Vito and Al, lots of other good people though. I could do a whole show on that of just the good people to follow on Twitter. G-Ski Rocks is on there and he'll come up with some good stuff. Bigfoot, a lot of good stuff. I mean, a lot of good follows on Twitter. And then, of course, you can go to Facebook, Hank Jones Polysports. The only thing I really do there is tweet out what's going to happen, or not tweet, you know, message what's going to happen. And I don't do that every week. That's a different type of follow and different type of, I mean, that's social media. And I got to admit, the main reason I go to Facebook is to play Candy Crush. You got to go every day, get your new daily spin of the wheel and your daily reward and all that stuff. But I'm getting up there. I'm not, Mrs. Hank is a lot farther along, but I'm catching up. I'll probably never actually catch up, but you know, she's in the house as well, by the way, along with our adorable, and I mean adorable, little Australian Shepherd who is looking out the back. Now she just turned to look at me. She's looking out the back door. She loves doing that. Sometimes she'll just sit out in the driveway behind our little gate and look at what's going on the street. Amazing. You know, I've talked about this before. We've been feeding her raw for about 2.5 years, and she is as excited about her food 2.5 years later, the same food. I mean, she's literally had the same thing every day. It's just a mix of raw pork, raw chicken, sometimes raw turkey, sometimes raw beef, some organ meat that they need. No, we don't give her fruits and vegetables. We could, but, you know, dogs in the wild would never eat fruits and vegetables. That would be last desperation move. They eat other animals. They're carnivores. Simple as that. So anyway, for 2.5 years, she has been eating that. And for 2.5 years, she has jumped shoulder high or higher every day waiting for her food. Can you imagine 2.5 years later, like if you fed your kid cereal every day and he or she jumped for it 2.5 years later, the same cereal? That's dedication. And it's also buying loyalty. I got to admit it. Oh, adorable dog, though. Really cool. So let's get to this week's obituaries. last Wednesday, we lost singer-actor Johnny Brown at the age of 84. Now, he collapsed after leaving his doctor's office. He was there for a pacemaker visit. They took him to the hospital. He could not be revived. He appeared in various TV shows over the years. He got his start actually in music, touring with Sam the Man Taylor, and then embarked on his own singles career. And then he got onto a show called Laugh-In. Now, he wasn't the lead person, but it was a pretty big show for him, and he was a regular on the show. He was actually considered for the role of Lamont Sanford on Sanford and Son, but he had a tie-up with Laugh-In. He later, of course, became most famous, I guess you'd say, for his portrayal of building superintendent Bookman on the show Good Times. So Johnny Brown gone at 84. And then Thursday we lost actor Tim Considine at age 81. Tim Considine, for those who don't really know who he was, he played the shell-shocked soldier that was slapped around by George C. Scott in the title role of Patton, 1970 movie Patton. Scott won an Oscar, refused it, didn't believe in competition and acting. But he also played Mike Douglas on My Three Sons. You don't remember Mike Douglas, the oldest brother? Nobody does. Much like Chuck Cunningham on Happy Days, Considine's character disappeared from the show with no explanation. This stuff was common and workable, really, back when we didn't have the internet and nobody could loudly complain and have it go viral. Back then, a soap opera man could send a character down to the ubiquitous wine cellar. Every soap opera estate has a wine cellar, don't you know? Send you down there to fetch a bottle of wine, never to be seen or mentioned again. Or it could also happen the other way. They'd send an actor into the attic to fetch some long-forgotten family heirloom, and then suddenly that character's gone. Now, in the case of soap operas, it worked so well, you could bring back the character months or even years later, and no one would question it. In this case, I think it's permanent. Actor Tim Considine has passed at age 81. Friday, we had two, I guess you'd say, two Hollywood-ish losses. Actor Mitchell Ryan passed away at age 88 of heart failure. And then Style Maven, what a great word, Maven. Style Maven Elsa Clench passed away at age 92. Now, Elsa Clench was on CNN from 1980 to 2001 for her show, appropriately named Style with Elsa Clench. Mitchell Ryan played various roles, including a stint on the original Dark Shadows TV show as Burke Devlin. He was also the father of Thomas Gibson's character Greg on the show Dharma and Greg. That's right, Dharma and Greg. You know what else he was in? He was in a movie. He played Hugh Hefner in the 1981 TV movie version Death of a Centerfold, a Dorothy Stratton story, to Jamie Lee Curtis's portrayal of the title character. By the way, she was much better than Mariel Hemingway. And hotter, by the way, than Mariel Hemingway's turn in the 1983 movie Star 80. If you compare the two, Star 80 wins in the Paul Snyder role. Eric Roberts was way better than that guy from Hill Street Blues, Bruce Weitz. In the quasi-Peter Bogdanovich role, Star 80, Roger Reese gets a slight nod over the 1981 version, played by Robert Reed. Yeah, given that Robert Reed played Mike Brady, and he was also the one guy that sucked in the legendary TV movie Pray for the Wildcats. Now, as an aside, I'm telling you, you must Google Pray for the Wildcats and then watch it for free on YouTube. It is the best ever crappy TV movie of the week. I mean, ever. Compare and contrast. We'll give the Hef character a draw. Now, both Mitchell Ryan and Star 80's Cliff Robertson had some street cred to him. In the title role, like I said, 1981 Jamie Lee Curtis versus 1983 Star 80 Mariel Hemingway. It's not even close. I am not even sure how Mariel Hemingway got the role. I'm really not. According to Hawkeye Mike, by the way, Mike Douglas was on the first five seasons of My Three Sons. That must have been when it was still like in black and white. said he pissed off the producer and was deep sixed. Well, think about Chuck Cunningham. I don't think Chuck Cunningham hacked anybody off. He just disappeared. Saturday, we lost former Minnesota Vikings linebacker Roy Winston, who's age 81. No cause was listed. I'm getting a little tired of this, by the way. Tell us how. Roy Winston, after being an All-America at LSU, he played 15 seasons with the Vikings. He appeared in all four of their Super Bowls that they made back in the 1960s and 70s. He made a brutal-looking tackle on Larry Zonka from the Dolphins in a game in 1972. But they remained friends after that. They had no hard feelings, but Zonka literally crawled off the field, thought he had broken his back. But they were friends forever after that. They remained friends. No real notable deaths on Sunday, March 6th, other than to say, per Wikipedia, the youngest was a Ukrainian actor and television presenter who passed away at the age of 33. 33. That's kind of tough. He was killed in a bombing. Yep. Killed in a bombing. Kind of tragic, huh? Kind of sucks. His name, I'm going to pull it up. I'm pulling it up on a different computer. I was pulling it up on my other computer, but the mouse has gone wonky on that, or the whatever. It's a laptop, so it doesn't have a mouse. But the mouse has gone wonky, so I'm taking a second to pull this up. I want to get his name right. You know, you try to get guys' names right from the Ukraine or Russia or whatever. This guy's name, at the age of 33, in a bombing. So don't tell me that war is nothing or whatever. His name was Pavlo, P-A-V-L-O, so Pavlo Lee. He died in a bombing at age 33. And the oldest was Sri Lankan Durberti Gunatlaka at age 97. Monday, we actually lost a centenarian, former Russian and Soviet Army colonel, Vasily Astafyev, at age 102. And then yesterday, we lost former boxer Ron Stander to complications from diabetes at age 77. Now, probably haven't heard of him. His claim to fame, he faced Joe Frazier for the world heavyweight title in 1972 in Omaha. Good Lord, Omaha hosted a world title fight. Anyway, he lost by TKO in the fifth round. And then we also lost Grandpa Elliott, a.k.a. Uncle Remus, to complications from a skin infection at age 77. He was born Elliot Small. He was a famed New Orleans street musician. If you've ever been to the Latin Quarter, you've seen him. He played the harmonica on several different corners. He'd occasionally have other people playing. I saw him the first time I was there. I did not see him the two other times, but the first time I was there in 1988, I saw him playing on the corner, harmonica, blues, soul. Very engaging, you know, engaged with the crowd and stuff. So those are our obituaries for this past week. I'm going to lead today in the news with a story that absolutely infuriates me. The NFL has suspended Atlanta Falcons wide receiver Calvin Ridley for at least the 2022 season, for betting on games during a five-day stretch in November of 2021, when he was on the non-football injury list to address his mental health. Yeah, he stepped away from football on Halloween, saying at the time that he needed to get his personal life in order. So he ends up making a series of multi-game parlay bets for a total of about $1,500. He also bet on other sports in bigger amounts. That's not against NFL rules. Yes, I'm going to rant like hell about this later. Okay, to January 6th news, Guy Reffitt was found guilty of all five felony counts brought against him in the first January 6th trial to actually go before a jury. Now, this is important, not because he was not guilty or was guilty, not because it was a kangaroo court. Either could be the case. But it also might be legit. But because we are finally seeing January 6th cases go to court, not just plead out. The other important thing to note is that some of what transpired in the Reffitt trial as well as initial findings or rulings in other cases, may well be brought to light either during trial or during the appeals process. The five guilty verdicts, by the way, obstructing the official proceeding of certifying the 2020 election, interfering with police, transporting guns into District of Columbia, carrying a gun onto Capitol grounds, and an additional obstruction count for threatening his children. I don't know what that's about. And I'll get to there's one argument specific to obstructing the proceeding is that the law was written with the application of specifically destroying documents or records in connection with a proceeding. And in another case, a judge in Texas has dismissed an obstruction charge, a judge has dismissed an obstruction charge against a Texas defendant. He dismissed the obstruction charge, ruling that the man himself had not directly interfered with Congress's certification of Electoral College votes. Officials accused Garrett Miller of being an active participant in the breach. And on May 12th of last year, a grand jury issued an indictment, charged him with 12 different criminal offenses, several of which are felonies. But according to documents, federal prosecutors argued that Miller's alleged involvement in the breach obstructed, influenced, or impeded Congress's ability to certify the Electoral College vote of the 2020 presidential election, or attempted. But in a 29-page opinion, U.S. District Court Judge Carl Nichols said that ambiguities in the wording of the law require him to take a narrow reading of it. And under that narrow interpretation, the court ruled the defendant must have taken some actions with respect to a document, record, or other object in order to corruptly obstruct, impede, or influence an official proceeding. And he said, because prosecutors did not allege Miller took such direct action, instead had simply joined a large group of people who breached the Capitol, the obstruction charge against him must be dismissed. He said, instead, count three of the second superseding indictment alleges only that he attempted to and did corruptly obstruct, influence, and impede an official proceeding. So, yeah, we're going to see some quote-unquote interpretations here down the road. This is going to get interesting, no doubt, over the next year or two. The narrative is still being protected right now, probably why you see Congress or that committee within Congress pushing for the January 6th inquisition against President Trump, not because they want the truth. They already know the truth. They don't want too much of the truth is what they don't want. What they want is a way to eliminate President Trump's ability to have any sort of voice on the public stage. They're pushing for this because in November, it looks like they will lose, the Democrats will lose the majority in the House and probably the House and Senate. And in so doing, and so losing it, would lose their ability. I mean, that committee will be blown up easily. But look, this is but one element that could lead to an eventual civil war in this country. And I'm not joking. Look, I don't like predicting that. But look at events of the last year and a half. We've got the election fraud. We had the Stop the Steal rally, which somehow turned into a riot, which then brought us the fortressing of the U.S. Capitol area. The idea of media now manipulating news, not just reporting it, biased reporting of news, but manipulating it. We got the overt cover your ass by Big Left. We have the still ongoing struggle for power and control using COVID, which is rife with fraud, rife with misinformation, and now rife with financial scandal, it appears. Gee. And, of course, the dismantling of our energy infrastructure, followed by rampant inflation in fuel prices and food prices, and then other sectors where inflation will inevitably follow. Look, Big Left believes that most of America will sit by and accept this, because they believe they have made most of America dependent. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that while Americans don't mind being seen as working class, blue collar, rural even, or redneck, even uneducated, I can tell you this, Americans will never tent with the idea of being servants or peasants, or most extremely, enslaved. Look, the calculated moves to use BLM, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa may well have already backfired. I mean, look, Antifa is now getting little mention or respect from big media. Why? Because they have been shown to have been in conflict with much of what big media says about them. BLM and the financial scandals alone, including probable loss of nonprofit status, is going to render that group less relevant every day. Why? Well, one, because a group where you can't park money, nonprofit money, believe it or not, is under much closer scrutiny. And frankly, really, another reason, the verdict reached in a case like Ahmaud Arbery clearly shows that Americans, and I mean all Americans, understand the difference between a tough job that a cop has versus outright murder. And they're less willing to let big media feed the narrative of racism and class warfare than big left probably believes. Don't misunderstand me here. I'm neither calling for civil war, nor am I calling for violence. But with each passing day, with each additional piece of bad economic news, with each additional egregious act of government overreach, with each additional insight as to the real issues and problems and causes that come to light, make no mistake, everyday average Americans are no longer going to accept the idea that they have to sit by and take it. They're just not. No longer will Americans allow corrupt local officials to give pet contracts and pet allowances, cronies. No longer will they allow corrupt school system officials or union ideologues or maniacal and untrustworthy teachers, for that matter, to determine the fate of our children. And look, Americans, you know, there's a lot Americans are tolerant of, but they're not going to be tolerant of outright manipulation of our economy and our daily lives in favor of elitists who believe that we, the people, average Americans, are just convenient instruments and their frigging lust for power. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. You know, Americans will forgive a Juwan Howard. You know, Americans will forgive a person making an ass of themselves at the Oscars or even on The View. They won't forgive being made a part of it and being enslaved as part of it. They won't put up with that. I don't think Big Left understands that. Major League Baseball is another week closer with no resolution on the horizon. Well, I shouldn't say that. They say that talks today, coupled with previous discussions, evidently they went well over into the night, that they're encouraging enough not to cancel any further games just yet. Some of the issues, free agency terms, another one, an international draft, competitive balance levels. To you and me, that's called a salary cap. Now, the Players Association has said if the owners refuse to concede to full pay and full service for a 162-game season this year, then the idea of expanded playoffs is also going to be off the table. Brilliant idea of two 75-game seasons. Nobody's listening still. Anyway, a friend of mine put it this way. He says, you have billionaires that are attempting to step on the toes of millionaires. Now, normally, I would say, get it fixed. Except I'm not all that confident anymore in Major League Baseball being anything more than a quasi-social justice agency going forward. Look, I grew up loving baseball, and I am a lifelong Cubs fan. But the idea that both sides can't come to an agreement is idiotic. But, like, again, as I said, baseball itself becomes less of an emphasis on the game itself with each passing season, and it'll continue that way as long as fans put up with it. Okay, the only portion today that I will deal with the Russia-Ukraine situation this week. First, I'm tired of the growing narrative that Ukraine is, quote, just as bad as Russia in this instance. Now, some people, back in the day, we called these kinds of people morons. There are people that are running with the comparison of Iraq-Kuwait and that the U.S. has no business being involved in any fashion. Now, that's preposterous, of course. Look, anytime one nation invades another sovereign nation, it is the world's concern. Going into battle is off the table right now. Maybe even other types of military assistance should be avoided. But the idea that it isn't, quote, our fight or, quote, isn't our problem is as misguided as the idea that we should don full battle gear and fire up all our fighter jets post-haste. But here's the one thing that really bothers me, one thing I've heard, and it's why the comparison to Iraq-Kuwait is such an indicator of either ignorance or just basic stupidity. And that one thing is this. The idea that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is a George Soros pawn. Yes, it's been seen in both traditional moron liberal media, but also there's been a healthy dose of it in some conservative media. And here's the simple way to know that that is crap. Zelensky has stayed at the risk of his own life, stayed in Ukraine despite numerous opportunity to leave. He has given people the ability to fight. People, George Soros, in addition to being very wealthy, is a gutless, cowardly, behind-the-scenes thug. Well, read up on the guy's history from World War II alone. Look, he himself would never stay behind. Neither would any Soros plant or pawn. So get rid of the idea that Zelensky is a Soros pawn. Now, look, as for comparisons to Iraq, Kuwait, the initial complaint, going back to Iraq and Kuwait, the initial complaint was back in the months after the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait, as U.S. diplomatic and service personnel were traveling back and forth. They were visiting casinos in Cairo, Alexandria, other places in Egypt in the months after the invasion. And rather than seeing wealthy Egyptians and wealthy Americans and wealthy Europeans and other wealthy international socialite types, they saw those folks, but amongst them, they also saw numerous members of Kuwait's royal family and government, bellied up to the craps tables, the blackjack tables, the roulette wheels. These folks were living it up with hardly a worry, while American military personnel, along with military personnel from other countries, were preparing to go into Kuwait and kick the Iraqi military out and hand the country back to the Kuwaiti royal family. So when people draw that comparison, that is decidedly not what is happening here. Numerous Ukrainian athletes, entertainers, and other folks of certain visibility have stayed behind to defend their country, with some making the ultimate sacrifice. That is not what we saw in Kuwait, not even close. Yeah, Hawkeye Mike just reminded me, big trade in NFL. Denver Broncos getting Seattle Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson. They traded away Noah Fant, the Broncos did. A number one draft pick in the 2019 draft. Yeah, 2019 draft. Drew Locke, who never worked out. And a couple of second-round draft picks. Yeah, there were two other players. There were three players total, I'm pretty sure. I don't remember who the third one was, but Noah Fant and Drew Locke. But, you know, hopefully it works out for both teams. I don't know. Don't know. We'll see. Carson Wentz got traded to the Washington Commanders. I think that's a salary cap move more than anything. Don't know what the Colts are going to get back. Probably just like draft picks and some kind of considerations. From the Gateway Pundit comes a shellacking of CNN for its story on Americans being willing to pay higher gas prices so that Biden can hold Putin accountable. Gas prices have risen over 100% since La Dopey Nostra was installed. This past week, we saw an increase of almost 20% at My Sam's Club. Well, Dopey Nostra says high gas prices are Putin's fault. And of course, actor George Takei, who never misses a chance to whore himself out on behalf of anything big left, he sent out this tweet. Americans, we can endure higher prices for food and gas if it means putting the screws to Putin. Consider it a patriotic donation in the fight for freedom over tyranny. Good God. AOC has not only met her match in terms of intellectual ignorance, she has also been surpassed in her willingness to completely display that ignorance. I mean, good. Does George Takei, I mean, I'm going to say right away, he obviously doesn't have the brains to figure this out, but no pride, no dignity whatsoever. I mean, he completely whored himself out to big left. Well, someone, please explain to me the quote-unquote freedom in this. Oh, and how in hell is it putting the screws to Putin or anyone else except American citizens to pay more than double for a tank of gas in a little over 16 months? Since we know the American energy industry has been castrated, it can only mean that other interests are enjoying the windfall, no? Wouldn't the very tyranny be occurring right here in the good old U.S. of A? Seriously, I mean, what the hell is patriotic about destroying the economy, devaluing our paychecks and our wallets and our damn bank accounts by paying more than double for a tank of gas today versus what we paid 16 months ago? And why I say double, I mean, I've been talking about 50%. November 4th. Well, I'll tell you in a second. Okay, back in December of 2008, Brother Tommy and I were discussing the upcoming Obama stimulus. You remember he and Big Left trotted that out as a necessity in the wake of a tanking economy? Brother Tommy and I nailed it then. And that was with at least 50 beers in us. Now, that's collectively, not each of us, but we easily put down 50 beers that night. We had to have. At that time, gas prices had fallen from about $3.80 a gallon to about $1.95 a gallon across Central Florida. In other words, we were already getting a pseudo-stimulus. So why increase the national debt and contribute to inflation by pumping artificial money into the economy when you were already getting a pseudo-stimulus? And that's exactly what we have seen the past 2 years. We have seen people lose jobs or quit the workforce or lose businesses. We pumped money into the economy that we didn't have, only to overstimulate people with extra money that they never had previously. Where are we now? Beef prices, depending on the type of beef, have doubled or tripled or more. Chicken wings are approaching beef prices. Yeah, let that sink in. Let that sink in. A part of the chicken that people used to only eat as a frigging snack and dialed up because on its own it's pretty grim, now that costs as much as a round roast or a lesser grade steak. Yeah, so any of you out there that can, please call in and explain to me the liberating feeling I should be experiencing paying more than double for a damn tank of gas than I was the day I dropped my wife off at the airport to go to Seattle to help our daughter shop for her wedding dress on November 4th, 2020, when the average tank of gas in Orlando was about $2.07. At Sam's, it was probably about $1.90. The other day, Sam's, $4.09. So double, basically. Double. Yeah, where's the liberating feeling there, George? Where's the freedom from tyranny? Putin on this. Consider it a patriotic donation in the fight for freedom over tyranny. What a moron. What a moron. Okay, so the NFL Combine took place last week. Saw some blistering 40-yard dash times in the wide receiver group, a near record. Although John Ross's 4.22 from the 2017 combine is still safe. One pleasant surprise, or two really, former Iowa Hawkeye running back Tyler Goodson turned in a 4.42 40, and running defensive back Dane Belton ran 4.43. For some reason, I don't know why, people were expecting Tyler Goodson to run like in the 4.5 or 4.6 range. Frankly, I'm not sure why. In fact, I'm actually more surprised by Dane Belton's time. Look, it's no secret I'm a huge Tyler Goodson fan. If you remember, we had his mom Felicia on the show back in 2020. She was an absolute delight to interview and to talk to. I told her then there had been a long TD that Tyler scored against Nebraska the previous November. I told her then that wouldn't have been scored by Akram Wadley or most running backs of the Kirk Ferentz era. So let's, you know, some people have said, well, you were wrong, but I wasn't. Previous Kirk Ferentz era running back, let's start from the beginning. Liddell Betts, his 40 time, 4.62. No, he doesn't hit the end zone on that play. Fred Russell, maybe. Fred Russell was pretty quick, but he had a share of plays where he got caught from behind. Albert Young, pre-injury, there's a case. Same with Jermell Lewis. Both of them, injuries definitely had an effect on their speed. Jermell Lewis, especially, multiple ACL injuries. Sean Green, he might have scored on the play, but not because of his speed. He's faster than a lot of folks gave him credit for, but he was nowhere near Tyler Goodson's 4.42. Adam Robinson, a definite no. Although, I guess, hey, he had really quick feet through the line of scrimmage. Brandon Weger, despite his claims coming in that he ran sub 4.4, he never ran faster than 4.52 at any sanctioned NFL event, combine, or whatever. He ran a 4.40 at Iowa State's Pro Day. Marcus Coker, no. Mark Wiseman, not even. Jordan Canzari, yeah, he probably scores on that play as well. He had excellent speed. Wadley, I've already determined, and you should agree with me, Wadley was a no. LaShawn Daniels, probably a no, although, again, LaShawn Daniels was faster than given credit for. In fact, of all the former Iowa running backs, Tyler Goodson does, in fact, have the fastest 40 time at the combine. Question becomes, will he run at Iowa Pro Day? Not sure why he even should. He put up great numbers at the combine. Good for him. Good for Dane Belton. Both should make money in the NFL or in Canada. By the way, Tyler Good's jab step against Maryland, that alone should get him into the league. Somewhere out there, there is a Maryland defensive back who is still looking around trying to find his feet after that play. God, that was awesome. Monday, State of Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Wadapo announced that the state would become the first in the nation to recommend against COVID vaccinations for healthy children. Now, Florida is doing this in the wake of the CDC saying kids 5 to 11 should get it, while Sweden announced its recommendation would be against it. And naturally, of course, Jen piped in with the idea that anyone recommending against the vaccine is a conspiracy theorist. Seriously, Jen Who'd have thought? In any event, this, along with Governor DeSantis not requiring students to wear masks. Yes, even brain-dead college students at University of South Florida. Parents then try to lie and say Governor DeSantis demanded they not wear them, which, of course, was an outright lie. Pretty much continues Florida's proper path of giving people the option to vaccinate, to wear a mask, or not. Look, I'm still running into people that are wearing masks. I'm not laughing at them. I'm not ridiculing them. I don't care. It's their personal choice. And if that's their personal choice, so be it. It looks stupid, maybe. But if they feel safe, and if they're immune compromised, then why the hell should I make fun of them? Why should I care? I don't. I don't care if you're vaccinated or not. I don't care if you wear a mask or not. What I care about is when you demand that I follow some codified, paranoid, hysteric view based on your politics. Speaking of annoying, obnoxious, smug, literal, liberal, elitist scumbags, Steffi Colbert, otherwise known as Stephen Colbert, Steffi Colbert piped in on the alarming increase in gas prices. said on his show, today the average gas price in America hit an all-time record high of over $4 a gallon. Okay, that stings. Conscience is worth a buck or two. It's important. I'm willing to pay $4 a gallon. Hell, I'll pay $15 a gallon because I drive a Tesla. Yeah, meanwhile, Mayor Pete piped in at a presser when he said Americans don't have to worry about high gas prices if they just buy electric vehicles. Now, I'm going to explain something here. There is a reason that there were bike racks at the schools that I went to in my long ago youth. That reason, it was to pummel guys like Mayor Pete and Steffi Colbert after class. You know, after class when they inevitably either narked on a fellow student for beating them in hopscotch or ratted them out for something as nebulous as jaywalking or playing tetherball after the recess bell ring. Remember those people? Yeah, those were the ones that got bike racked. And the people that did that were people like Mayor Pete and Steffi Colbert. Remember that? People that would narc you out. He hit the tetherball after the recess bell rang. Why are those people even allowed to live? I mean, when they're 10 years old, okay. But those people are going to grow up to be adults. Anyway, with this argument, next couple of weeks, I'm going to have a guest on the show. He has not only worked in the auto industry, he's also an unabashed car addict. In addition to being obsessed with classic model Porsches and restoring his grandfather's Mercedes and being a Cubs fan, he worked on various projects for various automakers. He wrote an op-ed and appeared on a podcast to talk about the abandoned pickup truck project from Kia Motors. He'll point out fairly about the benefits of both EV versus internal combustion. He'll point out that the long-term cost of ownership isn't as large as the gap between the purchase prices. He'll also explain why EV isn't necessarily all that green. So yeah, keep checking Twitter for the next couple of weeks for this announcement. He's traveling right now, so he's not available for at least a week. But he is loaded with good info. He's a good guy, fun guy to talk about everything from politics to baseball, college football, pro football. As a fellow Cubs fan, he'll probably have a good amount to say in the MLB situation. It was actually him who managed or mentioned to me the current struggle being the billionaires trying to step on the toes of millionaires. Good guy. His name's Fred. I grew up with him in the summers up in Wisconsin. His family and my family go back generations, and just a good guy. Good family, really. And I look forward to having him on because he will talk about it. He'll come right out and say, look, don't necessarily discount everything about electric vehicles. The long-term cost of ownership, you know, weighed against the long-term cost of ownership of an internal combustion engine vehicle isn't that great and can be less. I mean, your maintenance costs yearly, much less. Far fewer moving parts. Now, you got the batteries. And in some cases, the batteries make a difference. Other cases, the batteries actually cost more and raise the cost. So it's, you know, it's a wash. The green aspect, no. He says, somebody's got to manufacture this stuff. Somebody's got to manufacture the batteries. So that's not very green. And what is the goal with green anyway? So, yeah, keep a watch out. Keep a listen. He's a good guy. I'll have him on in a week, probably 2 weeks. Let's get to college basketball. Conference tournaments are underway. The first winner was University of Tennessee Chattanooga. They punched their ticket rather dramatically with about a 40-foot walk-off three-pointer against Furman. Amazingly, Furman hit a three-pointer late in regulation to get the game to overtime. And then Furman's Mike Bothwell gave him a two-point lead with 4 seconds left in overtime. And amazingly, UT Chattanooga did not call a timeout. They just inbounded the ball and went right up court. And senior David Jean-Baptiste, he was covered by two guys, by the way, he launched a shot I can only call Chris Kingsbury or Brother Tommy-esque. Brother Tommy, when he was in high school, used to throw up some whoppers. I'm good. My Brother Tommy had a great outside shot, but he'd launch them. Well, that's what this was, except this was desperation. Brother Tommy would just launch it. Same with Chris Kingsbury. There were 0.5 of a second on the clock when David Jean-Baptiste launched this thing. The buzzer sounded while the ball was in the air. And then the shot went through nothing but net, and it puts UT Chattanooga in the tournament as the winner of the Southern Conference. That's likely going to be a one-bid league, especially since UT Chattanooga was also the regular season winner. Yeah, Furman, I think, has 11 or 12 losses. That's not going to get the Southern Conference runner-up in. Gonzaga, I think, has punched their ticket in the West Coast Conference or the Big West or whatever they call that out there. They actually lost to St. Mary's, the team they played. I think they played last night. They actually lost to them back in January, February, somewhere around there. Big tournament, Big Ten tournament starts today in Indianapolis. Indy Hawk is obviously not there because Indy Hawk is right here in the chat room here at Global Patriot Radio as you listen to this show. He's not, or he could be. I guess he could be at the game and he's just logging in on his phone. But if he is, that's more power to him. But Big Ten tournament starts today. Number 13, Nebraska. They're on a three-game win streak, by the way, including their last two wins over Ohio State in Columbus and Wisconsin in Madison. They take on 12 seed Northwestern. That game just started 6 o'clock. The late game has number 14 bottom dweller Minnesota taking on number 11 Penn State. And then tomorrow, Michigan, number 8 seed going in against Indiana, the number 9. The Nebraska Northwestern winner goes up against the number 5 Iowa Hawkeyes. Number 10 Maryland plays against number 7 Michigan State. And number 6 Ohio State gets the winner of Penn State Minnesota. Friday, we get to the final weekend with the top 4 seeds. Illinois, Wisconsin, Purdue, and Rutgers, they finally suit up, take on the 4 winners from Thursday. Despite having a 15-point lead at one point, and despite missing more free throws than they made, Hawkeyes actually had a chance to beat Illinois and be the number 4 seed this past Sunday. Alas, with Nebraska taking down Wisconsin, I guess it kind of gave Illinois the incentive to win and get the number 1 seed, which they did. Now, should the Hawks win Thursday, they get number 4 Rutgers on Friday. That'll be a different one because Rutgers has a good number of quad 1-1 wins, but they've also got some stupid losses. They're 18-12. Now, a win Thursday would have Iowa at 23-9. They're pretty much a lock for the tournament at this point, I think. Rutgers is probably in as well, regardless. So the teams with the most work to do really are Indiana and Michigan. Pretty much everyone else is in. The top 7 are definitely in, probably the top 9 really, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with Indiana, Michigan, and if the loser of that game gets left out. But Rutgers, you know, that's the game. That's the game Iowa got a really ticky-tack foul call at the end of the game, gave up 2 free throws to lose the game. Crappy way to lose, especially when it's on the other team's court, and they hadn't been calling that close all game. But it is what it is. It's Big Ten officiating. If I had to have a pick for the Big Ten tournament right now, I'd say probably, believe it or not, Purdue or Illinois. I don't think Wisconsin. Wisconsin and Illinois don't. Really, the top 6 or, as I said, 6 or 7 teams don't need to worry. Really, the top 8. It's the loser of 8-9 that has the worry. Everyone else above them is pretty much in. So it's hard to say what the incentive to win. I mean, this is the time of year, though, when you see a team, a number 10 team or a number 12 team, you know, get into the final weekend of the conference tournament, get to Saturday, and you know, cause some headaches for the others. Now, as an example, Indiana's number 9. If they lose tomorrow and, you know, a Nebraska, let's just say Nebraska who's hot, or even a Penn State who can get hot. Northwestern, eh. But, you know, if one of the teams playing today gets hot, and wins it. Now, that's probably not going to happen, but if it does, then the loser of the 8-9 game really has to sweat. Because I don't think I just don't think under that scenario that 10 Big Ten teams get in. I think the number 9 team or the loser of the 8-9 game gets left out. My personal feeling on that. But again, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think you're going to see. You might see Nebraska because, like I said, they're playing much better. They gave the Hawkeyes a game a couple weeks ago. But, it's unlikely that they would win at all. So don't even kind of put that thought out of your mind. I'm looking forward to seeing what the Hawkeyes can do. Keegan Murray has been named a All-American. He's still in the running for several Player of the Year awards. I don't know that he'll be the Player of the Year in the Big Ten. There are a couple players that certainly deserve it. Kofi Coburn from Illinois, Johnny Davis from Wisconsin, both of whom also made this All-American team with Keegan Murray. So, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see whether Keegan Murray stays another year. I think he should, believe it or not. Some people say, he's got nothing left to prove. He's got to prove that he can hit free throws. That's one thing. I also think he'd like to stay and play with his brother Chris. And that's the other issue with the Iowa rotation is does Fran McCaffrey keep playing his kids? I'm not saying his kids are bad ball players. Connor McCaffrey is actually quite a good ball player sometimes, but he doesn't bring much to the table scoring-wise. Not on a consistent basis. Patrick McCaffrey, I like his athleticism, but he's out of control. Like Brother Tommy says, sometimes he just gets out of control. So we shall see. Going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a couple of rants, a couple of articles I want to just relate. A funny one from the Babylon Bee, by the way, which is pretty humorous. And then I'm going to, like I said, my rant about Calvin Ridley. Be back in a few, folks. Theme from Once Upon a Time in America from the late, great, very talented Ennio Morricone. 1983 movie with Robert De Niro, James Woods, Elizabeth McGovern. Great flick. Joe Pesci was in that movie, Burt Young. also in that movie. Like I said, good stuff. We got Indy Hawk in the chat room. He's the only one in today. He is going to the Big Ten tournament on Friday. So, Indy, tell us in the chat room what color shirt you'll be wearing, black or gold, and people will know what to look for. Yeah, I'm kidding. As I said before, follow me on Twitter, at HPolySports. Send an email to hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Of course, always call in on the show, 319-527-6706. It's a great way to listen. If you want to talk, you just hit the one. I get a little hand icon that you got your hand up. Remember like in kindergarten, first grade, you had to put your hand up properly? That's what that's for. Okay. Here's an article from American Liberty News. Just a quick point out. It says, you won't believe what's in this crazy memo from Biden's polling firm. Impact Research is one of the top left-leaning strategy and polling firms in D.C., and they recently crafted a memo to Democrats about the current state of COVID politics. Now, the memo was originally published on punchbowl.news. It says, right from the get-go, this document will make you throw up in your mouth a little, and then in parentheses, or a lot. It says, after 2 years that necessitated lockdowns, travel bans, school closures, mask mandates, and nearly a million deaths, and the article says, stop right there. There was nothing axiomatic or necessary about any of this. Then it goes on, it's time for Democrats to take credit for ending the COVID crisis. That was the editorial points out, editorial by Justin Hart. Points out, I'm not even sure how anyone can assert that with a straight face. We have fought Democrats and many Republicans on these measures for almost 2 years now. It is pure gaslighting to claim that the Democrats had any semblance or power or will to, quote, end, unquote, COVID. He points out, many Democrats still do not want it to end. And says they strike a conciliatory tone, but there's nothing altruistic about this. As they note in the second bullet point, twice as many voters are now more concerned about COVID's effect on the economy than about someone in their family or someone they know becoming infected with the coronavirus. The more we talk about the threat of COVID and onerously restrict people's lives because of it, the more we turn them against us. As he points out, well, at least they now admit that the restrictions were indeed onerous. So here's the menu in its entirety. After 2 years that necessitated lockdowns, travel bans, school closures, mask mandates, and nearly a million deaths, nearly every American family has the tools to protect themselves from this virus. It's time for Democrats to take credit for ending the COVID crisis phase of the COVID war. Point to important victories like vaccine distribution and providing economic stability to Americans and fully enter the rebuilding phase that comes after any war. War against who? You know, I've talked before, I'm not a big fan of concept wars, the war on terrorism, the war on drugs, the war on poverty. But in this case, what war? And it says, below we lay out some strategic thoughts for Democrats positioning themselves on COVID-19 after nearly 2 years of the pandemic. One, declare the crisis phase of COVID over and push for feeling and acting more normal. Thanks to Democrats, we are nowhere near where we were 2 years or even 1 year ago. Democrats have a tremendous opportunity to claim an incredible historic success. They vaccinated hundreds of millions of people, prevented the economy from going into free fall, kept small businesses from going under, and got people back to work safely. Biden and Democrats, we can safely return to life feeling much more normal, and they should claim that proudly. I'll take this one. What? What? Kept small businesses from going under? What? Prevented the economy from going into free fall? What's it doing now? People back to work safely? Really? 4.3 million people left the workforce in January. And if they claim it, they better not do it proudly. That's for damn sure. And their next bullet point, recognize that people are, quote, worn out, unquote, and feeling real harm from the years-long restrictions, and take their side. And it says, most Americans have personally moved out of crisis mode. Twice as many voters are now more concerned about COVID's effect on the economy than about someone in their family or someone they know becoming infected with the coronavirus. Two-thirds of parents and 80% of teachers say the pandemic caused learning loss, and voters are overwhelmingly more worried about learning loss than kids getting COVID. Really? Here's the scary part. Only two-thirds of parents and only 80% of teachers see learning loss. It should be 100% of both. It says 6 in 10 Americans describe themselves as, quote-unquote, worn out by the pandemic. The more we talk about the threat of COVID and onerously restrict people's lives because of it, the more we turn them against us and show them we're out of touch with their daily realities. You are out of touch with our daily realities, you moron. You are out of touch. Acknowledge COVID still exists and likely will for a long time. We are not advising that Democrats talk like the Republicans that have largely ignored the pandemic, even pre-vaccine. Declaring a return to the, quote, new normalcy does not mean ignoring that people will continue to get it, that we shouldn't be responsible, or that we should turn our backs on the medical community that is treating those sick and developing the therapeutics that will save lives. Bull! Instead, it means recognizing that the threat of COVID is no longer what it was even a year ago, and therefore should not be treated as such. Shutdowns, masks, and lockdowns were meant to save lives when there was not yet a vaccine that could do that. Voters know we now have the tools and the toolkit to be responsible in combating and living with COVID. Vaccines and boosters to minimize illness, and masks and social distancing around vulnerable groups. Bull effing crap. Done nothing but stonewall on therapeutics. You've done nothing but stonewall on other preventives other than the vaccine. You've done nothing but harass people that didn't vaccinate or people that didn't wear masks. You've done it in social distancing maneuvers and measures. You've done it to people in public. You have shamed people in public. Here's the next bullet point. Don't set COVID zero as the victory condition. Americans also don't think victory is COVID zero. They think the virus is here to stay, and 83% say the pandemic will be over when it's a mild illness like the flu rather than COVID being completely gone. And 55% prefer that COVID should be treated as an endemic disease. And that's what most Americans are dealing with, a disease with fatality rates like the flu, because most of us took the personal responsibility to protect ourselves and our families by getting vaccinated. Americans also assume they will get COVID. 77% agree that it's inevitable that most people in the U.S. will eventually get COVID-19, and 61% of Americans who have never tested positive think they are likely to be infected over the next year. And thanks to the work Democrats have done over the past year, despite believing contracting COVID is inevitable, most Americans are no longer fearful. I'm not even sure where to begin there. I'm really not. Next one is, stop talking about restrictions and the unknown future ahead. You are the ones that two paragraphs ago put quote-unquote new normalcy in the discussion. It says, if we focus on how bad things still are and how much worse they could get, we set Democrats up as failures, unable to navigate us through this. Well, if the shoe fits, when 99% of Americans can get vaccinated, we cause more harm than we prevent with voters by going into our third year talking about restrictions. And if Democrats continue to hold a posture that prioritizes COVID precautions over learning how to live in a world where COVID exists but does not dominate, they risk paying dearly for it in November, as you should. Between voter fraud, election fraud, illegal funding during elections, illegal rules made up during for the elections, under the auspices of COVID, yeah, you should pay dearly for it. And a lot, well past November. Some of you people should be in jail. God, unbelievable. That's an internal memo from Impact Research. Here's a good one from the Babylon Bee. It's a headline. It says, Pete Buttigieg, or however we pronounce his name, Pete Buttigieg says everyone worried about gas prices should just get a six-figure government job with free car service and unlimited parental leave. This is good. This is an article from the Babylon Bee. Remember, this is tongue-in-cheek. It says, in a speech to inspire and encourage Americans facing record-high prices at the pump, Transportation Secretary Buttigieg encouraged people to ease some of that pain by simply getting a six-figure government job with free car service and unlimited parental leave. Look, for every American out, the way out of this is simple, said Buttigieg. All you have to do is run for president, drop out of the race, and then get appointed as Transportation Secretary. I never have to pay for my own gas. It worked for me, and I know it can work for you. Also, it helps if you're gay. Try to be as gay as well. That usually works. Comments were met with criticism by those who found them insensitive to people who aren't gay and don't have a high-paying government job and a free chauffeur. Kamala Harris later clarified Buttigieg's comments, saying, gas prices are very high, but all the people have low money. That make buy gas hard, so basically that's bad. Transportation Secretary assured Americans that he understands the pain that comes with high gas prices and has promised to do something about it as soon as he's finished tearing down all the racist bridges. The Babylon Bee rarely, if ever, disappoints. Tell you what, it is gag-inducing when you read some of this stuff from these people. Okay, rant time. Okay, with Calvin Ridley, sports gambling, let's just say it. Look, we know sports gambling is now legal pretty much everywhere and mostly above board. Major sports leagues aren't even pretending to be above it. Some allowing their players to bet on sports other than their own leagues. Now, while opening up gambling to venues outside of Las Vegas doesn't eliminate the unsavory aspects of betting, the backroom sleaziness, or the unwashed folk that hang around at off-track betting parlors, we also know that a little regulation in this case doesn't necessarily hurt when it comes to what we traditionally call vices. But betting on one's own sport, or worse, treating it like a joke, as Calvin Ridley apparently has, yeah, time off for mental health. Yeah, then he goes and bets on his own sport, including parlay bets, including his own team. And the penalty? I'll let Ridley's own tweets tell you some of it. In a series of tweets Monday, after the suspension was announced, Ridley said he bet $1,500 total and that, quote, I don't have a gambling problem, unquote. He also tweeted that he couldn't even watch football at the time he made the bets. He added that he's just, quote, going to be more healthy when I come back, unquote, and that, quote, I know I was wrong, but I'm getting 1 year, LOL. LOL. That's his final comment on the matter. LOL. That's it, folks. One season, maybe a full year. Now, Pete Rose, the all-time hits leader in Major League Baseball, is banned from the game for life and will probably never see the Hall of Fame while he's alive. Is that right? I don't know. Is it fair? Not from where I sit. It was never established that Pete Rose bet on Reds games while he was manager of the team. Now, speculation is that he did, but that he never bet against the Reds. But even then, as David Brinkley pointed out back when the whole thing was going down, it wasn't whether or not Pete Rose bet for or against the Reds. It was the effect of him not betting them at all, gamblers, and ultimately cost as much as the fact that he bet at all. What cost? Confidence in the game itself. The integrity of the game, especially among those who are supposed to be what we euphemistically call keepers of the game. Now, if you remember, there was speculation back in 1993 that Michael Jordan left the NBA not because of the murder of his father or his being burnt out, but because of gambling issues. Now, look, while that has never been substantiated, and it didn't really bear out when he returned, he's, you know, he came back pretty darn strong and did pretty well. It's the confidence. It's the confidence of the American public, really, that suffers. Look, I will never get down on ownership in sports, whether it be NBA, NFL, it doesn't matter. They pay the bills. Yeah, they get sweetheart deals from politicians for stadiums and stuff, but ultimately, owners pay the bills. They make it possible for players to play the game and for fans to enjoy the game. Where they fail is when they put too much power in the hands of someone who doesn't have a stake, a Roger Goodell, a Rob Manfred, an Adam Silver. You know, at the college level, it's not the Coach Sabins or the Coach Ferentz's or the Coach Matt Campbell's or Coach Luke Fickle's, Coach Jim Harbaugh's, Coach Ryan Day's, even the Coach Lane Kiffin's or Steve Sarkisian's. It's not them that ruin it for the fans. It's the Kevin Warrens and the Mark Emmerts and even the university presidents and the chancellors who somehow feel they know better than the fans what is, quote, in their best interests. While I'm pissed at Calvin Ridley, I mean, seriously, the tweets, the LOL, I'm just as pissed off at the NFL and Roger Goodell. I mean, seriously, hold this guy accountable. Make his penalty an actual financial punitive one. Make it one where a player union can't intercede and a fan doesn't have to explain to a child that it's wrong, but we don't, quote, want to penalize the guy too much. Did Calvin Ridley ruin the game of football? Not even close. Did he shake the overall confidence in the integrity of the game? Again, not even close. Players aren't in it just for the money. They play the game because they love it. Do they get tired? Sure. Do some retire early? Sure. Some retire because of injury? Of course. But again, in the grand scheme of things, Calvin Ridley did not shake the overall confidence in the integrity of the NFL football game. Again, not even close. But his teammates and his fellow players across the league, they deserve better from a colleague and cohort. Maybe Calvin Ridley doesn't have a gambling problem, but he sure as hell has an accountability problem. End of story. Well, if you saw earlier, you saw that I was only going 90 minutes tonight, and I'm not even going to go 90 minutes. Had enough to say. Was able to say what I wanted to say. Talk about what I wanted to talk about. So we are going to close. But I'm going to close with this. Remember this. Remember this in the coming weeks, coming months, coming years. Remember this at election time. Remember this in your workplace, in your social sphere. Remember this. People can't place a value on you. They can't. People can only judge you and assess you commensurate with the value that you place on yourself. So the solution is to value yourself, assess yourself, and make yourself worthy of the highest assessment possible. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. Don't let people place the value on you. Place that value on yourself and make it a good value and be worthy of it. Thank you very much, folks, for being here. Indy Hawk in the chat room, Hawkeye Mike and Sue from New Mexico on the phones, and a couple numbers I do not recognize. I've often thought I should write them down and call them, but no, that's creepy. I'll be back next week. We may have our guest talking on the car industry and the virtues of both electronic and internal combustion vehicles, and you know, really what to look for in this time. You know, car shortages with chips and all that stuff. It's a problem. So the price of cars isn't going down anytime soon. Obviously, the price of gas is not going down anytime soon. So it'll be a good listen. Now, NBC News actually ran a story on how to combat these high gas prices by slowing down earlier and not the jackrabbit starts. You know, that's 1978 crap, when people literally drove 6 and 8 miles to the gallon Ford Country Squires and other behemoth cars. Now, if you really did that and drove 6 miles an hour slower on the interstate, okay, you'll save $2 a month, $3 a month in gas. By the way, if you really did slow down 6 miles an hour on the average interstate, you'd get run over and mauled by the semis that are passing you. But yeah, NBC News says, just slow down and avoid jackrabbit starts. You know, you're coming into spring and summer when it's going to be hot, so you're running the air. That ain't exactly friendly in terms of gas mileage. So come back next week. We will have more, and hopefully my buddy Fred will join us to talk about that. Also have NCAA tournament goings on. The first four games will be underway by that point. They go Tuesday and Wednesday, and then the actual tournament. Well, no, the actual tournament starts Tuesday and Wednesday, but the field of 64 will start on Thursday. Conference tournaments this weekend. A lot of good stuff going on. Like I said, Big Ten tournament. Do I think the Hawkeyes can do it? Yeah, theoretically. But I just don't, you know, they lost twice to Illinois, and they lost twice to Purdue. I mean, there are just a couple teams that we just don't match up well against. So there's that. But in the meantime, have a good weekend. Catch your conference's respective tournaments. Enjoy, as we get closer to spring, enjoy the outdoors. And if you're still in a place where you still have a little bit of winter, cherish that too. You know, there's nothing wrong with some good winter weather. So have a good weekend. Be safe. Don't put up with the crap. Don't put up with the mandates. Don't put up with the elitists. Good night, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.